It doesn't mean it's posted as possible work session.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the way they've been posted, but it's...
Yeah, that's pretty. It's kind of cool. Just keep doing that for a while. Oh, sorry. Okay, welcome to the House Land Use Committee. Today is March 5th, and we're happy to have everybody here. I'm done, so let me just call the panel and get the speakers who are back from last Thursday. Thank you for your patience, and sorry we couldn't fit you in and you had to come back. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2173 and ask Esther Lev, Kelly Beamer, and Tom Wolf to come up, and we're going to finish our list from the other day. And we've got 9 people total that signed up that I did not get. I was not good on my time management the other day and cutting people off, so.
Or not.
There's no possible work session today. We're not doing anything with this bill, so you can calm down back there, Justin Martin. Welcome. Esther, Kelly, or Tom. I've got it in that order, Esther, Kelly, Tom, but if you want to do it differently, it's fine.
Okay.
Fine with us.
Chair Clem and committee, my name is Esther Lev, and I'm the Executive Director of the Wetlands Conservancy. And as the name indicates, our mission is conservation of Oregon's wetlands. We're a nonprofit that's been around for 31 years, working in Oregon. And last week, you were sent 2 different things for me. One was a printout about why wetlands are so important, and the second one was a beautiful book called Heroic Tales of Wetland Restoration. And so I'm going to start out my testimony explaining why I sent you these 2 things and then follow up with a couple examples. Many times when these conversations happen, the last comment is about how many acres of ag land are we losing for wetlands. But wetlands actually provide a lot of public benefit. And so I think as we're having these conversations, it's really important to look at the value that wetlands play. So the handout that I showed you is that in addition to a lot of fish and wildlife habitat, is wetlands are natural sponges and water they have water quality benefit. So a couple years ago when the Mississippi flooded, is Baton Rouge actually did not flood because they were able to cut out some holes in levees. And the wetlands there actually were able to absorb a lot of the water. As many of you go to some big box stores now, Fred Meyer and stuff like that, you'll see wetlands in the parking lots, bioswales, and that's because they have water quality benefit. So again, I just think that the whole thing of recognizing that while we're all sleeping, wetlands are these entities that are in the landscape and they're providing some public benefit. And so we need to just factor that into the equation rather than just acres of ag land versus not. The book I sent you, Heroic Tales of Wetland Restoration, is our constituency is all over the state, and there's people all over the state who care about and preserve wetlands. So I spent 6 months, and I drove around and met with farm and ranch families all over Oregon, and that book is their stories. And it wasn't incidental that I called the book Heroic Tales, because each of those people had a real passion about their property and what they were doing. But each of them actually took a lot of heat on both sides, both from the regulatory process that they really felt put onerous restrictions and more demand of paperwork for them for permitting. And on the other side, many of them were ostracized by other people in the ag community for removing land out of production. But each of them, not only did they see their benefit for why they were doing it on their own property, they saw the public benefit that their projects were doing. So I encourage you to look at all of those stories and just hear, you know, and just see why some people were motivated to do that and how that worked for them. And I wanted to give you a couple examples because I think that any project, you can take anything, whether it's a restoration project or any project that comes before your committee, and each one has its own unique dialogue and its set of characters. And so I think we have to be careful that we don't just hear one and then put that on everyone else. So We're a land trust, as well as that we promote other people and private landowners working to conserve wetlands on their property. So we own property in the LC watershed outside of Waldport. And before we actually bought that property and we got some OWEB and federal money to do that, we went around and met all the neighbors from property that we were looking at doing. We only buy property from willing landowners. Before we buy property, we do an appraisal that says the real market value, and we don't pay any more than that appraised value of the all of the lands that we own in Coos Bay and in Lincoln County, we pay taxes on them. So, you know, we have a whole list of due diligence of water quality type things, of environmental reviews, of past delinquent tax payments, all of that before we buy things. Then once we bought that piece of one of the properties that we bought in the LC has an old oxbow, and our intent was, our interest in buying it was to hook up that oxbow. And so what we did is that we started having, and we've been doing this for 3 years now, every 6 months we have a potluck with all of our neighbors, explaining why we had bought the property, what we wanted to do. We hired consultants to do work for us to look at the ecology and how that would work. We invited all of our neighbors to that. When the consultants were done with that report, we invited the neighbors to come to that potluck as well. So it's been a very transparent. We work with Lincoln County, both the taxation department and the planning staff, anytime we're doing projects, letting them know we're doing this, how does this match the comprehensive plan. And we even have the person in the tax department there call up and say, oh, if someone's going to do an easement, be sure and have them do it on this day, and this is how this and that works. So again, I'm not saying that there wasn't problems in the stories that we heard the other day, but I think it's important to look broader and look around the state and realize that for each one of those bad stories, there's some really good ones, and that the dialogue needs to be like, how do we fix these things? The last thing is that, again, in that cooperative spirit, about 4 years ago, we, again, do a lot of work in Lincoln County.
So just you got about 30 seconds.
Okay.
If you want to comment specifically on the bill, okay, that would be good, too.
Okay. Yeah. So my comment on the bill is that I think that this bill does not address some of those issues, and I think it's going to be more punitive and not work for a lot of people who are doing voluntary work to basically conserve and enhance these wetlands that provide a lot of public benefit.
Good, thank you. Kelly.
Thanks. Thank you. Chair Clem, members of the Land Use Committee, my name is Kelly Beamer. I am the Executive Director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that was started in 2011 that represents 18 land trusts throughout the state of Oregon. And I am here today actually to testify on behalf of 7 of our members who wanted to engage in this hearing but were not able to be here in person. I believe you have the sign-on letter that these folks passed around. I will also say that in addition to the 7 on this letter, Esther's group Wetlands Conservancy is part of COLT. Brad Chalfant, who you heard from on Thursday, is with the Deschutes Land Trust. And Crystal McMahon is from the Klamath Lakes Land Trust, and she has also submitted testimony into the record. So a little bit about the groups on the letter. Southern Oregon Land Conservancy serves Josephine and Jackson County. Columbia Land Trust serves 14 counties in the Columbia River region. Greenbelt Land Trust is serving Polk, Benton, and Linn counties. Wild River is on the coast, serving Curry and Coos. Blue Mountain Land Trust is serving Umatilla. Grand Ronde Valley is represented by the Blue Mountain Conservancy, and the Wallowa Land Trust is also. So we really have a wonderful representation from around the state. Just a little bit about land trusts. As you probably know, land trusts work with private landowners to obtain conservation easements that really help maintain working farms and ranches, protect water quality, protect wildlife habitat, and preserve open lands in Oregon. These projects create an enhanced habitat for native species across the state and are pursued using the best available science, assuring accountability at every step. House Bill 2173 would have a significant impact on projects throughout Oregon where landowners voluntarily partner with land trusts to carry out restoration work. The bill contains two major provisions that would drastically curtail voluntary efforts to improve the health of Oregon's wetlands and riparian areas. The first one is that it changes the status of activities to create, restore, and enhance wetlands on land zoned for EFU from an outright to a conditional use. A conditional use permit is often costly and requires local governments to expend resources on a sometimes lengthy process to determine whether the proposed use is appropriate for the site. Requiring private landowners to apply and pay for conditional use permits for voluntary restoration introduces an unnecessary burden for landowners working to provide public benefits through their partnerships. Second, HB 2173 removes the shield of liability for projects on land zoned for EFU. Oregon law currently provides immunity from liability from damages resulting from habitat or water quality improvement projects on private land. This law is specifically designed to encourage operators, timber owners, and landowners to voluntarily improve fish and wildlife habitat. By removing the shield, private landowners are far less likely to engage in voluntary conservation projects in cooperation with public agencies, thereby limiting the options of those landowners who wish to manage their land in the way that they deem most beneficial. So thank you for your attention to this important issue. We hope you support our efforts to provide private landowners with the tools they need to undertake voluntary conservation efforts by opposing HB 2173.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Chair Clem, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, representing the 3,000 members of Trout Unlimited in the state and 150,000 members of TU across the nation. We are the largest nonprofit restoration group, among other things that we do in the United States, working on hundreds of projects across the state. And just for a brief note, there is before you written testimony. For those of you who have never heard me testify before, I never read my testimony. So what I'm about to say is not necessarily going to be there, but I just want to say briefly that what we do is we work with land trusts. Land trusts will require easements and land. We work to do the restoration, whether it's on the coast, on the Mechanicum right now with willing owners such as Herb Thompson or the other people on the Mechanicum in Central Oregon with the Deschutes Land Trust on Whitechoose Creek and various other things. We provide the volunteers. We provide grant funding. We provide lots of things. We oppose HB 2173 because it would be a drastic way that would harm the work that TU does to restore trout and salmon across the state, a mission we take very personally, that we work very hard at with our volunteers and our staff. What I would like to suggest, and it talks more about it in the testimony, is that instead of pursuing this court, that you look at forming some sort of study group to address the very real concerns of many of those landowners who ripped my heart out when I heard them testify the other day, and I've heard them talk about this at ODFW commission meetings, which I attend all the time. So this is a very, what happened on the Coquille, and has something I'm very aware of. But I feel that HB and Trout Unlimited feels that HB 2173 would be too drastic. Let's look at a solution that would bring everybody to the table, look at ways that we can remedy this without a drastic bill that would limit the kind of work that volunteers like TU who care about fish and salmon and watersheds, willing landowners who want to work with land trusts and groups like mine, and the work the land trusts do. So I urge you to not pass this bill, to come up with some sort of study group or a bill that would incorporate a study group and move on from there. The issues that the landowners have raised is a real issue, but the work that the land trusts and groups like Trout Unlimited do are also where we need to make everybody work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions for this panel? Well, seeing none, thank you. I'm going to call Ryan Gordon, Jerry Nicolescu, Q, and Heath Curtis up. I don't know if Heath is here.
I don't see him.
I'm kind of wondered why he signed up even at all on this bill. Now I'm really curious. Well, we'll just let you two. I'll just let you two gentlemen go, and we'll see if we find our third person. So Ryan, I've got you first, and then Jerry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Ryan Gordon, and I'm the Executive Director of the Network of Oregon Watershed Councils. The Network of Oregon Watershed Councils supports the efforts of about 80 watershed councils statewide that work collaboratively to enhance watershed health and benefit their local communities. And that's clearly a pretty broad constituency. Obviously, I can't represent all of those viewpoints today, and I'm admittedly struggling to figure out what I can add new to the conversation here. But I do want to say from council perspectives, from the council perspective, that they really rely on relationships with landowners to accomplish their restoration. And those landowners include farmers, ranchers, foresters, as well as individuals that live in both urban and rural communities all across the state. And House Bill 2173 would really make it much more difficult and costly for councils to work with those voluntary partners to achieve their restoration objectives. The bill would limit liability protection for landowners who participate in habitat or watershed improvement projects. And those liability protections have really been an important tool for councils who are working with landowners to accomplish restoration on private land. The loss of those protections would significantly impact councils' ability to build those relationships I was talking about, those relationships that are really necessary for achieving basin-wide results. The bill also requires conditional use permits for restoration projects, and these would increase the cost, complication, and time required to complete those projects. So in addition to acting as a further barrier to landowner participation, I think particularly from the council perspective, councils have really limited staff and resources to work on smaller restoration projects. And in some instances, the increased cost that would come along with those conditional use permits would make it really much more difficult to accomplish many smaller projects that I think are really important to achieving, again, those basin-wide or landscape-scale impacts. So it really seems unnecessary to put barriers in the way of the work that landowners are trying to complete along with councils and partners. And like everyone else, I heard the hearing, I heard the testimony last week, and clearly there are some very real problems that need to be addressed in some areas around the state. Obviously this model isn't working everywhere, but I think that rather than trying to legislate a solution that would have broad-ranging impact across the state, it would be better, as the previous speaker said, to really focus on what's not working in those areas and try to make improvements locally. So appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ryan. Jerry.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Nicolescu. I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, and the districts have been putting conservation on the ground probably as long as anybody in the state, since the late 40s and early 50s. We're fully aware of all the perceptions and concerns concerning acquisitions. I've heard a lot of them here, and I have heard a few more that haven't been brought up, but I won't bore you with those, so we'll go along from there. We oppose this for two reasons. One, the conditional use permit requirement, the cost and impact to water quality for districts out there and to the landowners trying to do the right thing would be significant, especially at a time when we're trying to make sure that we can prove the effectiveness of what districts are doing out there and moving the water quality program ahead, especially ag water quality. And the loss of liability protection, the voluntary nature of the work districts do, it would impact that. I had the opportunity to talk about a dozen districts last week and some training in Eastern Oregon, and when I talked to the district managers, to almost a person, when they understood the situation, they said that this would stop their ability to put conservation on the ground through private landowners. So also both of those reasons would also have an economic impact. Number one, the cost of putting a conditional use in place and stopping the work that's done. and the loss of liability, both to a landowner if he was sued because of for some reason, and also because the work wouldn't go forward, and a lot of that work supports rural economies. So I think there's another way to address the needs of dealing with acquisitions, but this may not be the way to do it. Thank you.
No, Heath. Last call for Heath Curtis. Wasn't even sure actually it was on this bill. Might have signed up on the wrong bill anyway. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Katie Fass, Steve McCoy, and Richard Whitman, our final panel. All right. Go ahead, Katie, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fass with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2173 and for hearing the bill, and I think a good discussion around the issues. The intent of House Bill 2173 is not to stop wetland projects, but really have them have a proper vetting discussion with the community and a process before they move forward. And I think you heard some of the concerns from landowners that we're hearing from our membership, not just on the coastal areas, but throughout the state and especially here in the Willamette Valley. The bill does two things. One, moves wetland restoration projects through a conditional use process instead of an outright use in the farm zone, and then also addresses liability issues when projects go beyond how they were designed. Right now, with the liability exemption, there's not a recourse for landowners. The concerns that we're hearing is that some of these projects can have an impact on neighboring farms' ability to continue in their farming lifestyle, and that's in a few areas. One, in issues when public prices are used, many times those properties are purchased or the easements are purchased for beyond market value or beyond the farm gate value. And we're hearing a concern, especially from younger farmers, about areas where there's a lot of activity taking place that actually there's an artificial inflation or a concern about an artificial inflation coming in farm prices. And they're concerned that they are being priced out of the market. One, in an area of not knowing that these sales are taking place, so not having the ability to participate in the sale or put in a counter bid, or that the prices are one that is higher than what the farm market's at. The other issues are concern on the farm concern of impacts to the farm infrastructure. That can be from just the loss of farmland in an area, so there's not the same people to support the local co-op or the pesticide dealer or the distributor. The other places are the issues around drainage systems, and that are you going to be impacting a drainage district or a drainage system that other farms are relying on their ability to move that water off their property through a collective system? And that is why you see the adjustment for the conditional use process, because that would bring in some notification into the community, some ability to comment, not stop the project, but make sure it's designed in a way that it's not going to impact neighboring farming operations. On the liability front, there's a current exemption that went in the statute in the 90s that I think had good intentions to be able to move and foster voluntary cooperation between public entities and landowners. But the concern and the issue that we're having is some of these wetland projects actually are growing beyond their boundaries, and they're encroaching on other people's property, which would normally be a trespass issue of water. If you're changing the makeup and landscape of your property, that now the water is taking out acreage on someone else's property or flooding them out so that they can no longer farm it, that is traditionally a trespass issue that's handled in civil court. the statute right now exempts wetland restoration projects that have public partnership or public dollars from liability. And so that is creating for some landowners a situation where they have no recourse it is really sue their neighbors or have the issue resolved. And we're getting calls where there are acreages that are becoming unfarmable because of neighboring projects. And that is the other concern and why you see the liability exemption removed for some types of projects in the bill. We recognize that there is concern with the legislation and have been in discussions with the governor's office about moving this into an interim discussion. And I think Richard can touch on that in more detail. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Steve, Richard, whoever you prefer.
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resource Advisor. The House Bill 2173 is aimed specifically at issues having to do with wetlands, but the underlying issue here is actually a much broader one. It's the issue of what is the sustainable long-term picture for agriculture in Oregon, and what is the overall rate of loss of agricultural land in Oregon, and what are we seeing in terms of encroachment of non-farm uses on our agricultural economy. This bill singles out one use, wetlands, and focuses attention on that. But the real issue here, the concerns that we hear from the Farm Bureau really get to this question of, we have a lot of things encroaching on agriculture, and what is the long-term picture for the state? So we have met several times between a number of state agencies, the governor's office, and the Farm Bureau to talk about these issues. And I've handed out a one-page sheet that has some suggestion for a legislative concept to really look at three main issues. One is this issue of loss of farmland, particularly in locations where there's a limited amount of farmland, so probably a location in the Willamette Valley and a location on the coast. And then also to take a hard empirical look at this question of encroachment by non-farm uses. In terms of the loss of farmland, we actually have pretty good data that show what the trends are in terms of conversion of farmland to other uses. But for this issue of encroachment of non-farm uses, the energy facilities, the wastewater treatment facilities, the recreational centers, the list of 50 or so non-farm uses that are now allowed under statute, we really don't have a good handle on what the effect of all those non-farm uses is on agriculture in the state. So taking a focused empirical look at in a couple of places and seeing what effect those uses are having, I think will give us an empirical basis for having a reasoned conversation about how do we address this issue generally, not for a use at a time, but in terms of the overall picture of our land use system. So that's really our suggestion, is that we move that into a data-driven analysis and discussion and come back with specific recommendations to the legislature in 2014. The last piece of this is the liability issue, and there again, I think there's a fair amount of confusion about the liability provisions. You've heard from the conservation community significant concerns about 2173 and the effect it would have on what's been a very locally citizen-driven restoration effort in the state of Oregon that's been very important in terms of restoring our natural resources, our fisheries to the state. At the same time, we hear the same concerns that the Farm Bureau is hearing about project design being poorly done, lack of communication in some cases between project proponents and neighbors. So how to address that? I don't think the best way to address that is necessarily through a land use process. We should be having a system where project proponents are required to offer to sit down with their neighbors and go through with their neighbors what is the design of this project, what are the potential conflicts between projects in existing drainage systems or irrigation systems or pesticide application practices or what have you. But to have that sort of consultation up front, and then to have, when we do have problems that are unanticipated, to have a clear system for how to get recourse so that the neighbor who is experiencing flooding knows what they can, what they have to do in order to get somebody to fix that problem. I think we can get there. I don't think we have to get there by undoing all the liability shields that exist in current law. So, again, I've handed out a one-page concept that I think will get us there, and that's where we would suggest that the committee go with this issue. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Steve.
Chair Klim, excuse me, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We have been talking in this committee for the last couple of weeks about farmland conversion and about issues with non-farm uses on farmlands, whether it was aggregate or now wetlands. It is our feeling that it is time for kind of a holistic view of what is basically happening on our farmlands, what is taking farmland out of farm use. I think that the path that the governor's office is suggesting is a good step forward. I may have mentioned last week that agriculture is the number two economic sector in the state, land is its feedstock. Without land, we do not have agriculture. I think now we have an opportunity to identify what issues are out there and to sit down with stakeholders and try to see if we can solve those issues. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Vice Chair Cameron.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Mr. Whitman, you mentioned 50 or so non-farm usages. Aren't those all requiring a conditional use permit?
Chair Klim, Representative Cameron, no. There are two categories of non-farm uses. One category is a set of uses that are allowed outright without a permit from the county, and then another set of uses that require a conditional use permit. So right now, wetlands creation, restoration, and enhancement is in that first category that does not require a permit, as are some other things that involve wetlands, including wastewater treatment systems and wetland application for water treatment purposes. So it's sort of a funny mix between those two categories, and that's part of, frankly, what needs to be looked at.
And you mentioned in your testimony that it's probably best if the neighbors got together and go through and look at the design and how it will impact the area. And I think, as Mr. McCoy said, we've been here listening about aggregate in farmlands, and there's a conditional use permit that they have to go through and I believe apply for, and neighbors have to get together, and there's public input to that process. Is there a reason why we wouldn't have public input and neighbors input to wetland restoration just like we do aggregate?
Chair Klim, Representative Cameron, I don't want to prejudge the outcome of this process, but I will say that many of the uses that are in this first category that do not require a permit are uses that are generally supportive or part of the normal practice of agriculture. So many farmers participate in conservation programs, and the federal government actually funds many of these conservation programs, and farmers are often moving lands in and out of them. That's not the sort of thing where you want a long permitting process if you're moving land in and out of a use like that repeatedly back and forth. So that would be one reason I would have some concern about moving wetlands into a sub 2 use, and would suggest that we deal more directly with the conflict issues by requiring people to sit down and talk.
So can a farmer move wetlands in and out? And what's the process to go about doing that? I have a couple of farmers, and in fact, I'm going to go visit one. Maybe you should go with me. And who's complaining about his issue right now with wetlands and not being able to farm it?
Yeah. So, Chair Clem, Representative Cameron, I'm going to quickly get over my head here. But there are other experts in the room who might be able to speak to this more effectively. But I'm thinking of the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, the CREP program. Which basically allows farmers to let fields lie fallow for a period of time, and under some circumstances there's management to improve habitat. So that sort of use could involve letting lands that, if they're not farmed and managed, could revert to wetlands basically on their own.
And then come back into actual agricultural production at a later date.
Yes, and again, Chair Clem, Representative Cameron, I hadn't refreshed my memory on all the federal and state provisions for wetland regulation as it applies to farming, but in general, there is a prior converted cropland exemption from wetland regulation that allows farmers to basically manage lands, continue to manage lands for agricultural purposes, even if they would revert to wetland if not managed for some period.
Thank you.
Representative Holdy.
Thank you. Mr. Whitman, you mentioned the federal government playing into this arena. Do you know why the federal government has this program to incent restoration to wetlands of farmlands to begin with? And I know they have some programs around riparian zones as well. So could you elaborate what that, I guess, policy goal that we're being asked by the federal government to achieve?
Chair Clem, Representative Holvey, there are several policy goals depending on what part of the program you're talking about, but one is simply to overall federal policy and state policy of no net loss of wetland area. We have lost an enormous amount of the wetland area that was originally in not only Oregon but nationally. So has been for some time a federal policy of no net loss. What that means is when you have somebody who is proposing a development activity that is going to require filling of wetlands, they have to find another area to either enhance wetlands or create new wetlands as mitigation for that development activity. So this tool, if you will, of wetlands creation enhancement is actually pretty important, particularly in a place like the Willamette Valley, as a necessary part of economic development activity more generally for the Willamette Valley. So that's one policy. And then separately, for conservation purposes, for both federal purposes and state purposes, for water quality reasons, for wildlife, for all those purposes, we may be encouraging creation or enhancement of wetlands. I should mention that the data that I have seen show that we are continuing to lose wetland area in the state of Oregon. The rate of loss is slowed significantly, but we are still continuing to lose wetland area.
Follow up. So it seems like in this conversation you're going forward that perhaps we should also look at establishing a baseline based on some past history of some of those critical wetland areas, riparian zones, that I'm assuming at one time were converted to farm use without a conditional use permit. And so I'm just sort of, you know, wondering when we made cast this broad zoning of everything being farm use and allowed the conversion of those wetlands into farmlands, whether or not the subject matter should also be about trying to reestablish some sort of baseline for wetlands in some of the most critical riparian areas.
Isn't that right?
Chair Clem.
That was a question.
Yeah. And shouldn't that be part of the conversation? That's what I'm asking.
Chair Clem, Representative Holvey, as I said in my testimony, the ultimate question here is sort of what's the long-term balance between our very real need to have a vital agricultural sector and other needs that we have, needs to accommodate other types of development, conservation goals. And so, yes, I think the answer to your question is yes, that should be part of the look. And it's part of this question of what's the ultimate balance.
Representative Unger.
Just a quick question.
Representative Unger, sorry.
That's okay. A quick question on scope. And I don't know if this is a question for you, Richard, or if it's a question for you, Chuck. Is the scope of what you're proposing here just focused on wetlands and farmland?
Chair Clem, Representative Unger, no. That's the whole point, is to look more broadly at all the non-farm uses so that we can get a sense of not just for wetlands, but for all the non-farm uses, what the trends are. And really to look at non-farm uses in a couple of categories. There are some non-farm uses that are almost a necessary part of farming. And so that's one category. And then there are other categories that aren't so directly tied. And so I think we'd want to separate things out a little bit into some of those categories.
Quick follow-up. For what it's worth, I do think that some of these uses are a little bit clearer than others as far as whether or not they should be allowed or not allowed. And while I'm encouraged by the direction of this work group, I also think that this committee ought to still consider removing some of the exempted uses during this legislative session.
Sure, we'll have some bills on that topic by Representative Unger, I think, if I read my list correctly.
That's correct, Chair.
All right. Okay, any further questions? So before you escape, Steve, I got one. What do you think about all your friends in the conservation world sort of bagging on the conditional use permit as a tool you've used repeatedly? I find it kind of fascinating. I heard the word drastically impede.
Chair Clem, members of the committee.
Not to put you on the spot, and you're like part of a coalition.
Thank you for
probably.
The question.
Yeah, thank you. It's kind of rhetorical. You don't really have to answer if you don't want to.
No, I think I will. I do think that we're talking about nonprofits that have limited funds. Making things more difficult for nonprofits with limited funds is something near and dear to my heart, or not making things more difficult, I should say. It's certainly something that's near and dear to my heart, and I understand where they're coming from that standpoint. At the same time, farmland is important. Agriculture is the number two economic sector in the state, and it's important that we respect that and keep those jobs as well. So is the conditional use permit process some sort of impossible hurdle? Well, no, it's not. But it can be expensive, and it can be something that, people would like to avoid under certain circumstances.
Pretty good answer. Not bad. Okay. And luckily for the nervous out there, the relating clause for House Bill 2173 cannot take the contents of this, so I'll just have to kill this one and we'll have to start over with a new bill. Like I was thinking I'd just hold it over every day so I could see Justin Martin panicking in the lobby, but we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2173 and say goodbye to it for this session. And we'll look for this legislative concept that we just heard about at a later point and adjourn the Land Use Committee for today.